بشار وفتنا نشيل على بشار وبهم مثل الحوية سوريا بدها سوريا بدها وفتنا نشيل على بشار وبهم مثل الحوية سوريا بدها سوريا بدها شيل على بشر وبهم مثل القوية سوريا بدها سوريا بدها Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Elaine Hagopian, who's a Syrian-American sociologist and professor emerita of sociology at Simmons College in Boston. She has an article at Counterpunch, Bashar Assad's Missed Opportunity, Syria's Pandora's Box. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elaine Hagopian.
Thank you.
And your extensive article at Counterpunch goes through the modern history of Syria starting at 1971, and it lays the groundwork for much of what's happening today. However, the notion in the article of Bashar Assad's missed opportunity, was there any way, given the what you refer to as the Alawite Mafia, the sense that this family has treated a country like its own personal plantation, mm-hmm. was there any likelihood ever that he would not miss the opportunity?
Well, that in retrospect, because I wrote that article in June, it's probably true that he had, in essence, from those forces on him, he had no choice. But as in all things, you do have a choice. And his choice was that he could have come out in his public speeches rather than being sort of casual and talking about there will be reforms, you know, and then never producing them. In other words, I think he could have made a public statement and challenged the existing powers that be, both in the Ba'ath Party and the security forces, to really come around. There may have been an attempt to assassinate him if he did. The question is, will he last anyway? So does he have authority? Yes, I think he does, but I don't think that he is the total picture. In recent days, however, I think he has given in further and further to the powers that be and has become himself part of that structure in a way that where in the past I think he probably was straddling a line and was finding it difficult to go over to reform because of the forces on him, and on the other hand, towing the line for these people. Well, he needed to stop straddling.
Well, Elaine Hagopian, obviously, when the people came out calling for reform, the response from the regime and the regime's thugs was to kill them, and thus the cycle of violence and, in effect, recruitment for the opposition began. But my understanding is that in terms of pressure on Assad, isn't some of it coming not from just his brother Maher, who's in charge of the Republican yes. Guard, but also from his mother?
Oh, yes. There was an article that pointed out and said to him, you should be as strong as your father.
Who killed thousands of his fellow Syrians
in
Hama.
Maher, to me, is a very important figure. In some ways, he reminds me of his uncle Rifat, with whom Bashar's father, Hafez, had a lot of trouble. Rifat was a loose cannon, and he's somewhere either in London or Paris. He goes back and forth, also still trying to become the alternative to Bashar. But at the same time, I think the Western forces, particularly the United States, and also Saudi Arabia and Qatar and a few other of the Gulf nations, saw this protest as an opportunity to try again to, through one door or another, to break down that alliance between Iran, Syria, and Hezbollah, the only alliance that has resistance, or at least alleges resistance, to the Western designs in the area. And I think that they played a role in now training the Free Syrian Army, which, by the way, many of those defectors of the Free Syrian Army are from the Idlib area, which is the Muslim Brotherhood area. And we have bases, U.S. has bases in Turkey. And, you know, there are indications that, training is going on in Turkey. We also have special operation forces on the Jordanian border specializing in monitoring communications within Syria. So there was an opportunity. I think now as the Free Syrian Army and the rebels within become militarized, and the Syrian National Council, which has a lot of Syrian expatriates who live in the United States and Europe, and who WikiLeaks tells us that so many of these exiles were cultivated by the U.S., is trying to say that they basically are in charge. They have now offered to help the Free Syrian Army get arms and training. Question is, where do they get their money from? And we know also that the spokesperson, Burhan Ladioun, who is in Paris, stated that the council, should it come into power, would sever relations with Iran and Hezbollah, and would look for diplomatic means to work out the issues with Israel.
Sure. Well, but Iran is supporting Bashar Assad. They've exported the Revolutionary Guards and the Basij militia to help train the Syrian thugs in killing their own people. So I can't imagine why they wouldn't cut ties with Iran. But first of all, let me just reintroduce Elaine Hagopian, who's a Syrian-American sociologist and professor emerita of sociology at Simmons College in Boston. And she has an article at Counterpunch, Bashar Assad's Missed Opportunity, Syria's Pandora's Box. My understanding, though, is that the United States has not been particularly interested, or they've been ambivalent for the longest time, that they've taken their cues from Israel, who've also been very ambivalent. There are very senior Israeli people calling for trying to make a deal with Assad while he's weak to shore him up, because they're more afraid of the Muslim Brotherhood than they are of this corrupt regime. And furthermore, I spoke recently with a former CIA officer who actually speaks Arabic, one of the few people in the U.S. government, Robert Baer, who knows the Syrians well, knows Hezbollah, knows all the players there, and was recently talking to the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood, who he stayed in contact with, the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood, and they were complaining to him that the State Department wouldn't take their phone calls. And Bob said to the guy, well, you know, what are you going to do if you guys take over? And he said, well, we're going to kill all the Alawites. And Bob said,
that, of course, is a major, major concern.
Right. But that's at which point Bob said to the guy, well, you know, no wonder the State Department won't take your phone calls, you know. So I'm not sure that the U.S. really has a policy here.
I think that in a sense we fell into it. At first, President Obama was hesitant and was simply asking Bashar Assad to enact reforms and so forth. And then he asked him to step down. And then Hillary went to the UN and recently. And
Today she's having that meeting in the Security Council. They're trying to squeeze the Russians.
Yes, and she's trying to say we're not moving towards Libya, the Libya-type approach. At the same time, we do have people in Turkey and on the border with Jordan. The U.S. is not a disinterested party.
Well, it has a vast empire of military and intelligence assets.
It's not going to. I mean, as Hamid Dabashi pointed out recently, you know, the U.S., Saudi Arabia, to some extent, Israel, but not so much in the Syrian case. And Qatar and many of the Gulf states, they attempt to micromanage the direction in which this Arab Spring is going. Now, you know, the U.S. has approached the Muslim Brothers in Egypt because they saw what the elections were like. There is no reason to believe that, as the Syrian National Council has developed and has members that are theoretically Muslim Brothers, that the U.S. Is not looking ahead in terms of if the regime falls, if Assad goes out, and we should also say that Assad is not necessarily the regime; he is head of it, at least allegedly, and they would have to do a lot more cleaning, and that would almost look like an Iraq type thing. But if the Syrian National Council or the National Coordination Committee for democracy, which is in for democratic change, which is in Syria, and unlike the council, is not asking for international intervention. The council is, but if they do get in, the question is the United States just going to wait to see if they get in and the Muslim Brothers get elected, or are they going to try learning from Egypt to somehow approach these people? In a number of articles, especially those that come out of AIPAC, and this particular article by Seth Wickes, they talked about the fact that the people in Syria, this is back in earlier years, are not open to approaches from the U.S. We do know that the U.S. supported exile expatriates, and so what this guy was recommending is to have more Americans, to try to visit with some of the potential leaders of dissent in Syria, and to try to convince them to come and meet with Secretary of State and basically, sort of cultivate them. Well, those that remain in Syria, for the most part, and who are not influenced by the council or the Free Syrian Army, do not want intervention. The Syrian National Council and the Free Syrian Army do want intervention. What that intervention means does not necessarily mean a NATO-type bombing, but it does mean some sort of other force that must go in there if they want to put a stop to this.
Well, already my understanding, Elaine Hagopian, is that the U.S. doesn't really have much on the ground, that the Turks are running the show, and they broke
the
with us.
The Turks are very much involved. But
the Qataris have put in a brigade that was put together in Libya.
And
they're arming. They're arming this. I just wanted to let the audience know that this is the reality.
Yes, we know all this. But the Qataris, who are they trained by? The Turks, they're very good. I mean, they are highly developed and so forth. They are cooperating with the U.S. And we do have bases in Turkey. And you can't tell me our forces aren't in some way involved in this training.
No, I'm not trying to tell you that. I'm just saying that in this modern world of surrogates, we have Kenyans and Ugandans fighting for us in Somalia. We're learning how to outsource. But just to touch on, because we're running out of time here, obviously a lot of people in Syria still are undecided. They're terrified that the country's going to turn into an Iraq.
Yes, they are.
Which is what the legacy of George W. Bush's great folly. Mm-hmm. So that's a big factor. But if the Israelis are saying that they still like to make a deal with him, I mean, is there any chance the Russians are backing him to the hilt and they're selling arms to him? Is there any chance that they can make some kind of deal that he hold on, or has it gone too far along? Because I know
I think it's gone too far. And let me just give a personal note here, just based on the history of Israeli actions. They are concerned about possible Muslim Brother takeover. On the other hand, they have worked for years, many, many years, to try to either modify Syrian behavior or to change the regime. And if you look at the way in which they've activated the Israeli lobby, they helped to push through the lobby here, the Syrian Accountability Act, the 1559 in the UN, trying to tell the Syrians to get out of Lebanon, etc. So I think that the Israelis put out certain stories and can be very convincing. On the other hand, we don't know what they're doing behind the scenes. Certainly, I would say this as a closing remark, that the attempt now, whether it was so from the beginning or whether it developed as things went along, is certainly to restructure the Middle East and in many ways look at Syria and to fragment it, to make it a weak state, because indeed, even if a Syrian National Council bolstered by Turkey or the U.S. or anyone else, you have very strong groups in there, the Alawites, the Sunnis, the Christian, the Druzes, the Kurds, which you know would perhaps fragment, and it would be a very weak state, something like what Iraq looks like today. And that could be very chaotic and destabilizing. On the other hand, it wouldn't be a very strong area. So we need to keep our eye on this, and we also know that it is almost impossible at the moment to get a very clear picture of just exactly who is killing, who is pitting, how much on each side is this happening. It is a truth that the regime is brutal. It's also a truth that the opposition is not necessarily respected within Syria, those that are being put forward and given a lot of publicity. So one would have to say that, you know, it's a sort of a curse on both their houses. And somewhere in there is an authentic movement that somehow needs to coordinate better and reassert itself and move ahead.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Elena Gopian.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Elena Gopian, who's a Syrian-American sociologist and professor emerita of sociology at Simmons College in Boston. She has an article at Counterpunch, Bashar Assad's Missed Opportunity, Syria's Pandora's Box. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back with one of the country's leading experts on the Mormon religion.